Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Interfaith Alliance will host its annual Russell Bennett Faith and Courage Award this Saturday at All Souls Unitarian Church. This year's award goes to Dr. Don Pittman, the director of the Interreligious Understanding Program at Phillips Theological Seminary. Speaker for the event is an unflinching absolutist in resurrecting the wall of separation between church and state in the United States Armed Services, a wall he says has too often been obliterated. Mikey Weinstein is the founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. He's a 1977 graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, spent 10 years in the Air Force as a military lawyer and judge advocate general. He later served in the Reagan White House as a legal counsel. He began his work on religious freedom in response to the Air Force Academy proselytizing scandals back in 2004 and 2005. Since then, he and his organization have plunged headlong into any case where a military organization or military individual have forced their religious views on others. He is the author of two books, With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against the Evangelical Coup in America's Military, and No Snowflake in an Avalanche, the MRFF, Its Battle to Defend the Constitution, and One Family's Courageous War Against Religious Extremism in High Places. Weinstein has won the Person of the Year Award, their very first ever, presented by the American Uniteds for the Separation of Church and State in 2011. And at the end of 2012, Defense News named Mikey one of the 100 most influential people in the U.S. military and defense. He will, again, be speaking this Saturday at 2 o'clock at All Souls Unitarian Church as part of the Russell Bennett Faith and Courage Awards. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Mikey Weinstein, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
An honor to be here, Rich. Thank you so much.
You'll be speaking this Saturday on a dire national security threat, the destruction of the wall separating church and state in the U.S. armed forces. How unsteady is that wall in the armed forces today?
Well, the best way I can describe it is that basically the concept of this kind of one sentence, we're dealing with a fanatical. To begin with, the wall is nothing but smoke and debris. I'm sorry to report to you on this great show that we have here, but it's gone. We're dealing essentially with a fanatical religiosity, and not Salafi or Wahhabist Islam, but what's known as fundamentalist or its synonym, dominion or dominionist Christianity, mixed in with actual weapons of mass destruction, which we have and the other side fortunately does not really have yet, further mixed in with this tortured or, hideous version of so-called patriotism, further mixed in yet with totally unfettered access to these weapons of mass destruction, because of the very vertically encrusted draconian nature of military command influence necessarily exists in the U.S. military, further mixed in with a total dearth, Rich, of any restraint, oversight, or supervision. And what you have is a metastasizing, not PIC, not problem, issue, or challenge, but a true national security threat internally to this country, every bit as much, if not exceeding, what we face externally by resurgent Taliban, al-Qaeda, and the jihadists, and the insurrectionists. And it's so large, it's almost impossible to believe that it exists in the U.S. military unless one is complicit.
Now, that's a pretty broad indictment. And you're a military man yourself. How have
things
changed?
Yes, I'm an honor graduate of the Air Force Academy, class of 77. My brother went there. My brother-in-law graduated from there. My son-in-law, who's a Christian, devout Christian, my daughter-in-law, who's a Christian, my two sons, all graduated, and my father went to the Naval Academy. My my nephew has served 5 combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan as a Marine and U.S. Marine. My family has over 130 years of combined active duty military service, pretty much in every major combat engagement the country's been in, from World War I to this current so-called global war on terror. And I know that the crazies on the religious right would like very much to be able to, paint me as a a Chardonnay-sipping, Northern California, tree-hugging, bleeding heart liberal Democrat. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but, I happen to be a registered Republican. I spent over 3 years in the West Wing and of the Reagan White House and other parts of it. I was general counsel to H. Ross Perot. I guess I would say, being on your show today, that this is not a political spectrum left or right issue. What it is, Rich, is a constitutional right and wrong issue.
Now, getting back to your indictment at the beginning, that seems to be pretty broad, that there is a wide wave of proselytizing towards Christianity in general and a particular brand of Christianity in the armed forces.
it's not. I don't call it a broad indictment. It is what it is. I mean, it's just. I know it's hard for people to accept this, but the best way I can describe it would be. I'm sure you're at some. Do you have a pen or a pencil near you right now, Rich? Anywhere?
Yes.
Can you pick up that pen or pencil and please hold it 6 inches over your desk or table there in the studio?
Okay.
Now, bear with me. I'm going somewhere with this because this is very illustrative and educational. Can you drop it?
Sure.
All right. Go ahead.
Just did.
Why did it drop?
Gravity.
Right. Can you see gravity?
No.
Yourself?
No.
Right. But that is exactly how inextricably intertwined fundamentalist or dominion Christianity is. It's essentially an alloy with the technologically most lethal organization ever created by humankind, which is our U.S. military. Look, I'm speaking to you today. We have 34,729 clients as of an hour ago in our foundation. The clients are sailors, soldiers, Marines, airmen, cadets or midshipmen at the Naval Academy, my dad's alma mater, the Air Force Academy, West Point, National Guard, Reserve, Coast Guard, veterans. 96% of our clients, here's the shocker, are practicing Protestants or Roman Catholics. Only 4% of our clients are Jewish like I am. We represent a little over 13% of all Muslims in the U.S. military. We represent 801 lesbian, gay, bisexual members of the U.S. military, but only 4% are not Christians. And these are Christians that are being marginalized and dehumanized, kicked to the curb, and oppressed and being the subject of tyranny because they are, quote, not Christian enough. You know, we've been in this fight. February will be 10 years. And we've had 12 of our clients killed in action downrange in Iraq and Afghanistan. The saddest day happened just about a week ago, a year and a week ago, when a very dear friend and one of our most bold and aggressive and active advisory board members, former Navy SEAL Glenn Doherty, one of the two SEALs killed in the attack in Benghazi, you know, when he died in that fight. We lost him, and we have not been able to replace him since that time. So this is a very serious business. I always tell people that this type of civil rights activism is not, you know, like riding a unicorn, Rich, through a cotton candy forest, handing out lollipops to little forest animals that are singing in unison in English. You know, this is blood sport. And there is such an enormous tsunami of fundamentalist Christian unconstitutionality in today's U.S. military. You know, it's terrifying. We're talking about the place where all the nuclear weapons are, and the laser-guided weapons, the drones, and the conventional weapons. And if anyone, you know, I mean, give me 5 minutes. Get on our website at militaryreligiousfreedom.org. Look at the video. Look at the listen to the audio. Read the text. I've written 2 books on this. You know, we have a wonderful array of advisory board members, which includes one of Colin Powell's best friends, his chief of staff when he was Secretary of State, Colin Powell. You know, this is Colonel Larry Wilkerson. We have retired admirals and generals and we've had former state governors, including here in New Mexico, our former two-term Republican governor, Gary Johnson, a big supporter on our advisory board. In fact, he was the Libertarian Party candidate for president last November and garnered, you know, almost 1.3 million votes. So
let me ask you, earlier you said that most of your clients are Christians who have felt discrimination for not being Christian enough. Can you give us a sense of how this manifests itself in the military?
You know, you have to understand that the military itself, and I'm not sure, have you ever been in yourself, Rich?
I'm not, no.
The military is almost indescribably tribal, adversarial, communal, and ritualistic. This is not like working at Costco or, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And, you know, it's a brotherhood, and it's reluctantly also a sisterhood. But, you know, it rewards conformity and following what the norms are supposed to be. And if the norms include an appropriate level of constancy with regard to an homage to a particular weaponized version of Jesus Christ, if you are out of sync with that, well, then you become, like I said, we say that if you're being even gently evangelized in today's United States Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, you know, telling your military superior, get the hell out of my face, sir or ma'am, simply is not an option for you. So they come to us, and we provide AARP, and not the one you're thinking about, but anonymity, action, results, and protection. We are very militant. We are very aggressive, but our aggression and militancy are in support of the U.S. Constitution. If you care about animal rights, you know, on one end of the spectrum, you've got the Humane Society. I'm sure there's one right there in Tulsa. They're very sweet. They're nice. Everybody loves them. On the far end of the spectrum, you have PETA. We are PETA when it comes to fighting for, you know, the separation of church and state in the U.S. military.
Well, what you're saying comes at a time when perhaps the military is more diverse than it ever has been.
Well, it looks that way on paper. And, it, you know, it's great to sit there and say, okay, now we've gotten rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and women are as equal as men. There's a sexual assault scandal in the military that's in the papers every day. My very dear friend Kirby Dick had an Oscar-nominated documentary this year called The Invisible War, all about that. We still have race issues in the military. We certainly have terrible issues regarding sexual preference. But the one thing that is talked about least, not so much so since we've been fighting it, we've been elevating this to a level of consciousness that where people can understand it, is this concept of the overarching dominance of this incredibly aggressive and constitutionally noxious version of Christianity. Look, our largest endorsing organization is not a Jewish organization or an atheist organization. It's the California Council of Churches Impact. I mean, that's 5,000 individual churches in California, 1.5 million California Protestants. In fact, they're made up of 21 different denominations. Speaking of 21, we have 21 different denominations of Baptists alone among our clients. We also have 12 members of the Jedi faith. I mean, it's right out of Star Wars. We don't ask, man. We got it on their dog tags. You know, that's what we focus on. But, look, as Frederick Douglass said, right, power concedes nothing without a demand. So the Military Religious Freedom Foundation and me as its founder and leader, our job is to be the demanders of the commanders. And you can't be nice, and you can't be Mr. Rogers when you do this. You've got to be the Hulk.
Yeah, a lot of people, when they talk about the separation of church and state, look at the public square where you're able to talk about your own beliefs. It's just having respect for other beliefs. What's happening in the military that is counter to that? Because earlier you gave the example of a commanding officer maybe proselytizing or perhaps sharing his religion. Is that not allowed in the military in your view?
It is not. I mean, let me put it this way. You have to look
because
at...
Because you have a superior...
during the duty day?
Yeah, you have a superior subordinate.
Is it occurring subordinate in uniform? Is it occurring in the workplace? A workplace can be a cockpit, a tank, it could be a submarine. The duty day is often 24-7. As General George Patton said, you are always on parade. You know, is it ever okay for a college professor, you know, to ask out a student, one of his or her students, or a Little League coach with regard to a child and touching? We don't view our clients as complainants, but as spiritual rape victims from fundamentalist Christian religious predators. This is very, very serious. When you tell someone, Rich, that you lack integrity and trustworthiness, honor, honorability, you know, education, intelligence, and courage because of your chosen religious faith, military subordinate, or lack of any faith, why there is no difference between that and telling someone that you're stupid because of the color of your skin or because you were born a woman. There is no difference. It is dehumanizing. It is not allowed. Our Constitution is not just the separation of church and state, which exists in the First Amendment. It's also Clause 3, Article 6 of the body of the Constitution, which was passed in December of 1789. You know, the Bill of Rights, which of course includes the First Amendment, wasn't passed until March of 1791. Clause 3, Article 6 says we will never have a religious test for any position in the United States military. And yet in July of 2005, on the front page of the newspaper most reviled and despised by the Pentagon, the New York Times, so you know this had to be fully vetted, the then number two ranking chaplain of the Air Force, later promoted by George Bush to become the head chaplain, a two-star general, at this time a one-star, Cecil Richardson, made the statement that the new Air Force's policy, on the front page of the New York Times, was that the Air Force would reserve its right to evangelize anyone it determined to be unchurched. Think about that. So I guess the Air Force will hold a religious Geiger counter up to everybody, and if it comes back and says you're this amorphous, you know, indescribable thing called unchurched, while the Air Force reserves its right not to Judaize you or Catholicize you or mainline Protestantize you or Buddhize you or Hinduize you or Islamicize you or atheize or agnosticize you, but to evangelize you, really. And we went to court on that one. The military only understands the fear of being dragged into federal and state court and the fear of being exposed in the media, which we're doing on your radio show today at this very instant.
Yeah. Now, the example you gave, how common is that, that high-ranking officials, be it the leading chaplain or commanding officers, put their religious views out there for their troops and say, you conform or else?
Now, you have to understand, the military, again, remember we mentioned tribal, adversarial, communal, and ritualistic. They can write a performance evaluation on someone that to the average civilian would look literally, no pun intended, like they walked on water. but by slightly changing the tense of a verb or using the word a or the, their career is done. It happens constantly. And it's not just a commanding officer. Or chaplains don't really bother that they're bad. When 84% of them are evangelicals, but only about a third of those are Dominionists. Evangelicals, believe it or not, are our largest growth area. They're on our advisory board. They donate to us. They're on our staff. They are clients of ours because they won't go that extra mile to become a fundamentalist or Dominionist, which means that they violate the existing constitutional laws and Department of Defense directives, instructions, and regulations about the time, place, and manner. You can't scream Jesus in a crowded theater. I mean, it can be a three-striper to a two-striper. It can be a first lieutenant to a second lieutenant. Whenever you include the superior-subordinate relationship, again, during a duty day, whatever that means, based on the circumstance, in uniform, in the military workplace, that's when we get involved. If a second lieutenant is proselytizing a second lieutenant, it's not something that we're going to jump into with hammer and tongs. If it's a captain to a second lieutenant, we're all over that. But most of the time, it's somebody that's much higher than that. It happens in their base newspapers, in their online websites constantly. It happens in the things that commanders say and that superiors say. It never stops. It goes around the clock. And it makes us look like the 10th version of the 9 prior crusades, which, I tell people all the time, it does 3 things that are horrible for us. They all begin with E. It enrages our Islamic allies, it emboldens our Islamic enemies, and it eviscerates good order and discipline in the U.S. military. And you know, many of your constitutional rights are severely abridged when you put on that uniform. And why is that? That's in order to, again, I mean, look, having sexual intercourse with someone other than your spouse, adultery, is routinely punished in the military. I've tried and defended those cases in the decade I spent in the world of being an Air Force JAG. If you're told to go to the base dentist at 4 p.m. and you don't go, that's a felony. Why? Because it destroys good order and discipline, and we need to have the requisite level of good order and discipline to create follow-on requisite level of lethality for our military to protect the full panoply of our constitutional rights for everybody else. This is nothing new. What would you do if a commander wanted to push the fact that they were a Democrat on someone that was a subordinate?
There would be outrage. Certainly, there would be outrage.
But let me take you to the next step further. What if they were pushing Islam?
Outrage,
What if they ended their prayer saying, in the name of Allah, as opposed to in Jesus' name? Can you imagine what would happen? We just had a situation the other day where we had a member of the U.S. military dealing with the fact that their military work area, the commander wanted to put up a Bible quote for the day. Really? You have to remember, when you're dealing with a Dominionist Christian, they are telling you that all of your relatives that have died, and everybody that you've heard of that wasn't one of you, you know, Anne Frank, Gandhi, Einstein, they're all burning eternally in the fires of hell, which is where you are going to go unless you accept their view.
Let's take that one officer. Was that a case of ignorance or...
Does it matter? Any sufficiently advanced incompetence is completely indistinguishable from malice. I once prosecuted a military doctor. I was involved in the prosecution of a military doctor that got drunk and hurt somebody badly during an operation. To that person's body, the person could not form specific intent to harm because the person was drunk. So, does it matter that the person was ignorant? I don't know. Our point is it doesn't matter for what I said. Again, any sufficiently advanced incompetence is completely indistinguishable from malice, Rich. But there's a great phrase that civilization is a constant race between education and catastrophe. You know, so our job, we found one of the best ways to educate is to punch somebody in the face metaphorically, legally, ethically, and morally.
Well, another way of educating.
Our job is to be aggressive. Lay down a withering field of fire to make them do the right thing, because otherwise they won't do it.
So even if you just explain calmly and nicely to them, they wouldn't change their manner? It's, as you say, the metaphorical punch in the face is the only thing that works?
We tried, explaining nicely and calmly. That's so 2004. That didn't work. It's a little bit like if you have a little tickle in your throat, you might gargle. You might take some hot tea with honey. If it gets worse, it starts getting bad, you'll see your doctor. Your doctor might give you some antibiotics. And if it really gets bad, you're going to have, the adenoids and the tonsils ripped out with a surgeon. And that's where we are. By the time it gets to us, it's not a small matter. And
it's
as I said,
been perhaps addressed at the unit level, and it can't be resolved.
Well, we deal with units every day now. And many times it's resolved, but it's like a weed whacker. If we don't go public with something, we fix it for 2 weeks, and then the weeds comes back again. Mm. You know, so most of our stuff, of course, doesn't get into the media. The vast majority of our victories, we have victories every hour of every day. never get to the media. When it gets to the media, then that's when it's going to be bad. And, then we see, look, when white people ruled, when it appeared that Rosa Parks and others of the civil rights movement, a century after the Emancipation Proclamation and the passage of the 13th and 14th Amendments, you saw this, you know, white privilege was disintegrating before the eyes of white supremacists, and they came out with white victimization. Rosa Parks has taken away our right to sit in that front seat in the bus. The same thing with male privilege going away because of the rise of the feminist movement screaming to male victimization. And what we're seeing is Christian, fundamentalist Christian privilege eroding correctly and appropriately because of the fact that in our country, with our founding constitutional document, which separates metaphysical and physical, temporal and spiritual, church and state, you know, and following it appropriately, you see this screaming of the loss of fundamentalist Christian privilege, and what you're and they are screaming like stuck pigs that they are the ones being victimized. It's much like the playground bully after he's accosted by the teaching monitors on the playground after he's beaten little Billy into the dirt. He shows his fist to the teacher and says, "Well, look what Billy's head did to my knuckles." You know, or you've heard the one about the axe murdering. Yes. Son that after he's been convicted of murdering his parents, during the sentencing portion of the trial, he throws himself upon the mercy of the court, saying, "Your Honor, after all, have mercy. I'm an orphan." You know, so and we see it again all the time.
My guest today is Mikey Weinstein, attorney and founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. He'll be the guest speaker at the Tulsa Interfaith Alliance's Russell Bennett Award presentation this Saturday at 2:00 at All Souls Unitarian Church, talking about the destruction of the wall separating church and state in the U.S. Armed Forces. I'm going to ask in our last few minutes a couple of recent situations you've been involved with. First is a West Point cadet named Blake Page. Tell us a little bit about Blake Page.
Well, Blake is currently my special assistant. He's also our director of West Point Affairs. He quit West Point after finishing 3.5 years with only a semester to go because of the intolerable fundamentalist Christian persecution that was happening there. He did it to make a statement, much like that young person that stood in front of that tank in Tiananmen Square. This shocked people. He wrote a column, great one, entitled "Why I Don't Want to Be a West Point Graduate." It went viral. It was the number one news story for 11 days until the Sandy Hook massacre occurred. Tragedy occurred.
What did he experience as a West Point cadet? Now, was he a Christian or agnostic? What exactly?
Definitely was a diehard atheist. You know, but that wasn't the point. The point was the approved solution at West Point, as it is throughout the rest of the U.S. military, is this fundamentalist version of Christianity. And yes, there are others. Again, it's hard to stand up. When you see something like this, you risk not just your career, but of course you risk people that are supporting their families. You have to make a decision, you know, what's more important, my integrity and character and doing the right thing, or and my comfort, or do I make a stand for everybody to see? In Blake's case, I advised him against this at first. I was shocked he was going to do it. I'd just spoken at West Point the month before, and then I realized this was one of those moments because, you know, we're not born with soundtracks. You go to the movies, and the trumpets play, the drums play, the violins when something big happens, but in real life, the only soundtrack we have is in our heart and our soul and our mind and our consciousness, and I suddenly realized this was one of those moments, and it had a gigantic impact. And
what was the impact of the resignation? I know you invoked a dialogue with the superintendent of West Point, who was an evangelical or maybe even considered himself a fundamentalist Christian.
Yeah, there's no question that Lieutenant General Bob Caslin was a Dominionist. When Obama nominated him to take over West Point, we were prepared to start a bloodbath on Capitol Hill for his confirmation, but then some very close aides of his reached out and said, stop, he's changed. He'd been our highest-ranking official, military official in Iraq for 22 months, you know, moderating and mediating the centuries-old blood feud between the Kurds, Shia, and Sunni. And I think it changed Bob. You know, I reached out, we started a dialogue, and he is, in my opinion, no longer a Dominionist. He's an evangelical Christian, which is fine. You know, we would never stop anybody from proselytizing as long as it's done in a, again, time, place, and manner that is in accord with existing law in the United States and the Department of Defense. And Bob took over West Point July 17th, and about 5 weeks later, he invited me back there. I brought a very recently retired 3-star general in the Air Force to join me, who'd been kind of our go-to guy for the Air Force and the Pentagon for a number of years. He happened to be a classmate of mine from the Air Force Academy, Lieutenant General Bill Lord, and he was able to substantiate everything that we saw there, and it went extremely well. So we're feeling very positive about that.
Has it changed the culture?
Well,
to an extent.
He's only been there a few weeks, so culture change. And culture can change on a dime, but at some point, the military is going to have to punish somebody for violating, you know, for being a religious predator. to this day, we don't think it's ever happened in the history of the United States military, ever.
Now, in the National Defense Authorization Bill, there is an amendment by a congressman from Louisiana named Fleming, the Fleming Amendment. He said this would be very devastating if it became a part of it. I think the Obama administration has opposed this particular amendment because it basically prevents the military from prosecuting or harming a person who any of their words or actions of their religious beliefs, and actions, I think, is the most important thing. This could harm good military order and discipline.
Right. It would essentially, it's a little bit of a gray area, but apparently would require a commander to determine that it would negatively affect military necessity, quote unquote. It would be a not even a get out of jail free card. It's a license to engage in religious predation, to become a religious predator. Now, if we had problems with Muslims doing this, or Jews, or atheists, or agnostics, or mainline Roman Catholics, or Protestants, then, you know, we would take that to the fore and expose that the way we expose everything else. But that isn't the case. It's always only one perpetrator in our history. Fundamentalist, or again, Google it, Dominion Christians in the military. When Eisenhower left office, he warned America about the so-called military-industrial complex. What we fight at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, Rich, is nothing less than a fundamentalist or dominionist Christian parachurch military corporate proselytizing complex. I mean, look at the members of Congress from Oklahoma. Both Coburn and Inhofe, you know, your senators, are fundamentalist Christians. And then we're looking, I mean, why am I coming to Tulsa? Because, you know, Congressman Bridenstine, you know, he was supporting this thing. He's supposed to have been in the Navy. He's supposed to know better, but he's not going to know any better because their concept is that your faith comes before its faith, family, and then your country. That is not the way this country was built. We're not going to let people have a license to, you know, to go 150 miles an hour on Interstate 40. You know, that's not it's not going to happen. And by quietly, you know, sipping our tea and sticking our little finger out and following all the Marquis de Queensberry rules, that's not going to fight this. And so I'm coming right into his backyard, and our, you know, the mantra is that we are not going to censor our speech to comfort the ignorance of people like Bridenstine and other members of your congressional delegation. At least two other members of the House of Representatives are behind this amendment. We suspect the others, and I'm sure that if anyone asked Coburn or Inhofe, they'd be very much behind it as well.
Now, it has passed the House, correct?
I think it has passed the House, but I spent time during my years in the White House in the most powerful part of the White House, really, which is the Office of Management and Budget. And Obama's OMB has made it clear the president will veto the National Defense Authorization Act, essentially the Pentagon funding bill for 2014, if I think it's Section 529, if that is even remotely in there, as well they should. It would completely desecrate any sort of good order and discipline and morale. It would simply sanction this inordinate, noxious proselytizing for this putrid version of Christianity. And remember, 75% of our staff, 80% of our staff of 150, 75% of our staff of 150 are Christians. 80% of our board and advisory board are Christians. 96% of our clients are Christians. Half of my own family are Christians. I have members of my family that will be coming to this event on Saturday. But this is not something, again, where you can sit back quietly. If you care about what you're going to about where you stand on these matters, I hesitate to say the word issues because remember we're talking about a national security threat. Then you need to actually do something now besides watch the Sooners play football or the Golden Hurricanes or you know watching NASCAR or going bowling. You need to do something now. So come out on Saturday and let's discuss this and see what happens.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time today, Mikey Weinstein. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rich.
Mikey Weinstein is the founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. He'll be speaking at All Souls Unitarian Church Saturday at 2 as a part of the annual Russell Bennett Faith and Courage Award presentation given by the Tulsa Interfaith Alliance. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.